Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
The enormity of the legislation that's before us today can hardly be comprehended. It's with the interest scored by the Congressional Budget Office, the bill is $1.25 trillion. That is more than twice as much as the five-year Iraq war has cost. It's the largest expenditure in the history of this country or any country in the history of the world. Remember, we have a big budget. We're spending a lot of money, too much money, most people think, in our normal budget. Every penny of this money is debt. We do not have the money to pay for it. We're already in deficit. This just increases the size of that deficit. It increases the interest that we'll have to pay on it.
All right, it's Rock and Roll Friday on the Savage Nation. We can't believe what we're watching. I mean, how many aquariums can you go to in your life is the question. How many towns need an aquarium? Well, to the Democrat, there's an infinite number of people who want to go to aquariums. I guess it'll create jobs for fish feeders and fish cleaners, but the cost of the jobs will be about $300,000 to $600,000 per job. See, the Democrats tell you that by passing this pork barrel bill, jobs will be created. Now, of course, they're not lying in the big picture. They are lying. But how much will each job cost? The estimate, according to the Congressional Budget Office, is $300,000 to $500,000 per job. That's the cost of creating the job. So it's not that they're creating jobs. They're sending slush money back into the districts of the people who supported the fraud, the shill, the phony, the emperor. There's another big story I want to talk about as we all await the vote on the pork barrel bill. That, by the way, the speaker was the greatest. One of my heroes, Senator Jeff Sessions of Alabama, one of the true American senators. The rest of them make my flesh crawl. There's about five of them who are true Americans. The rest of them, as far as I'm concerned, should be deported. When I watched them in the floor, the well of the Senate, in the midst of America's crisis, patting each other on the back, rolling on their feet as though they're at a wedding, standing there as though it's all business as usual, I am furious. I guess they'll next want to control C-SPAN. I guess next they'll want to turn off the C-SPAN cameras so we can't actually see the faces of evil. Just as the so-called fairness doctrine is an attempt to shut off the voices of criticism in the United States of America, just as the Fuhrer of Chicago, Mayor Richard Daley, said that he doesn't want anyone to see what he is asking for in the pork barrel bill because then the newspapers will dig into it. You hear this? That's the object of the newspapers, Mr. Daley. The object of the newspapers is to dig into things that politicians do. That's their job, Mr. Daley. We don't live in Syria. We don't live in Iran. We don't live in Cuba, Mr. Daley. We live in the United States of America. But when it comes to the media, as you well know, they've all rolled over to the government, with the exception of talk radio. And in talk radio, it's only the conservative end of the dial that stands between absolute silence of the people and a total dictatorship of the politicians. The person leading the charge to destroy freedom of speech is none other than the perfect face for this pork barrel bill, and that's Debbie Stabenow of Michigan. In other words, if you were to paint a face on the pork barrel stimulus bill, if you were looking for the perfect embodiment of it, it would be Debbie Stabenow, both physically and mentally. She matches the pork barrel bill perfectly. Now, of course, I'm angry at her because she's a dictator in her heart. She'd like to turn off talk radio, and I'm angry at her. But there's another reason. And the other reason is that the Fairness Doctrine senator's husband was involved in a hooker scandal, and the girl he used in the motel room went to jail, but Michigan Senator Stabenow's husband escaped any charges whatsoever in exchange for his assistance in the case, according to the police in Troy, Michigan. So in other words, the hooker went to jail, Stabenow's husband avoided jail, and now this face of the pork barrel bill herself wants hearings on radio accountability. The fact of the matter is, there's more to this than meets the eye. This is something you're not going to read about anywhere else, but it's up on michaelsavage.com. Do you know who her husband is? Do you know why the embodiment of the pork barrel bill, Debbie Stabenow, wants a fairness doctrine? Do you know why this beast from Michigan wants conservatives turned off the air? Do you know why the beast wants it done? Michigan Senator Debbie Stabenow's husband, who was involved in a hooker scandal, has a name. His name is Thomas Athens. He is the co-founder of the Liberal Talk USA Radio Network. Did you know that? Did you know that this man arrested in the hooker scandal, her husband, started Talk Radio USA in 06 after leading program at the failed Air America, the liberal network that declared bankruptcy that year? Are you aware that this senator, this beast, this pig, has a husband who is running a competitive business with conservative talk radio? As far as I'm concerned, she should be thrown into prison. As far as I'm concerned, this woman should be stripped of her Senate seat for simply trying to destroy a competitive business. I hope you understand what I just said to you. The woman who wants conservative talk radio shut down through the so-called fairness doctrine or like bill has a husband who created programming for Air America, which failed. He then co-founded the Talk USA Radio Network, which is floundering because nobody wants to listen to that rubbish. We get it every day from Obama and his minions. We don't need to hear it from the radio. So the fact of the matter is, this is an attempt to shut down a competitive business. Ladies and gentlemen, I don't think you understand the danger we are in when beasts like this can get up there and get away with virtual verbal murder. The phone number here is 1-800-449-8255. I hope I've offended millions of people just now. I hope I've made you uncomfortable. I hope I've made you squirm when you understand. Is Obama's plan mainly for jobs or pork? You can weigh in on this vote on michaelsavage.com. Is it for jobs or for pork? Well, if you actually go onto my website, which you can't do right now because it's flooded with you, the listener of the Savage Nation, you can vote on that. But right now we'll go to the callers. Mel in New York. Is Obama's plan mainly for jobs or pork? Mel, welcome to the show from WOR. Go ahead, please.
Yes, sir. It's mainly for jobs. Why?
Sir, slow down. I know you're an ignoramus with no education. We understand that you're a man with no education. The fact of the matter is, you haven't done your homework, and that's why you flunked out of school and took a menial job early on. It's because you won't do your homework. Now, because you didn't do your homework in school, you got thrown out of school. And the reason you're espousing a lie now is because you won't do your homework. According to every analysis, even that of the Congressional Budget Office, only 9% of it goes for job creation, while 91% of it goes for pork. But you didn't do your homework, Mel, did you?
I did my homework. I know that you...
A loser. And what you want is a government handout. You want the government to send you money because you can't make it on your own. You know that you've been a disgrace to yourself and your family all your life, Mel, because you're lazy and you wouldn't do your homework. But you're not getting away with that lie on my show, Mel. The fact of the matter is, even the Congressional Budget Office says that it's 90 to 91% pork barrel legislation, Mel. All right, Mel, have a nice day. Jimmy in New York, WOR, Chicago, WIND. Peggy, welcome to the program out of Chicago.
Thank you. If we were going according to the standards of the liberals who decided they were going to call the commanding general betray us, we would be saying, Debbie, stab us now, wouldn't we?
How did she get her job as senator, this creature? How did she get that job?
The same way our governor Blagojevich got elected twice.
No, how did this creature, Debbie Stabenow, get the job as senator? Was she appointed or did she run for office?
Oh, truly? I don't know. I don't live in Michigan.
So. How could she get away with saying she wants to put conservative talk radio out of business and doesn't disclose that her husband has a competitive liberal network that's failing? How could she get away with that?
Because she has no conscience.
No, it's because the media is owned by liberals. It proves beyond a reasonable doubt what I've been saying to you for years, that the government media complex is 99% far left. Do you understand it? And they don't even want a 1%, if it is that high, of an opposing opinion. They want to crush all dissent in this country. They want an absolute dictatorship of ideas. They don't want any exposure of their behavior. Even the far-left senator, Dianne Feinstein of California, the extreme liberal senator, Dianne Feinstein, said she may not vote for this bill because it's not about job creation. Did you know that? And that's because Dianne Feinstein is trying to be a centrist. She has just been given a new appointment as chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee, and she's desperately trying to appeal to a broader base than the psychopaths who put her in power in San Francisco. And even she has said it's mainly about pork barrel spending, and she can't go along with it. Are you aware that over 30 Democrats have defaulted from this, have bolted from this? The so-called Blue Dog Democrats have said we're not voting for it. They will not support Obama's massive pork barrel bill because they say it's not about job creation. Sure, the dumb ignoramus is like Mel from New York. Maybe reads some kind of rag, a communist newspaper in New York, and says it's about jobs and the evil Republicans are against it. But that's because Mel was a high school dropout, no doubt, because he wouldn't do his homework. He was probably a doper and a, you know, a playboy of some type. And now he calls the show and says it's about jobs when even Democrats are saying it's not about jobs. It's about pork barrel spending. I'll be right back.
Savage.
In a few minutes after this segment, we're going to go to a break. We're going to come back to a real economist, Niall Ferguson, who says that a crisis of excess debt cannot be solved by creating more debt. Cannot. And of course, he's being shouted down by the ignorant fools who run this country, who are going to bankrupt your children's children. And we'll talk about that in a moment. And we'll talk about many things today on the Savage Nation, including the fact that I was the first in the media last week to say that Obama will have the shortest honeymoon in the history of any president, because nobody really knew who he was except us on the other side. It is the greatest example of brainwashing in the history of American politics. And as we see Obama on a daily basis, Obama the petulant, we see who the man really is. He's a community organizer, and we see that when he doesn't get his way, he becomes petulant like an angry professor. But you see, he has no exams that he can hold over us and say, we'll give you an F if you don't do what I say. This is not a college. This is not a community. This is a country. And the man's ratings are plummeting across America. Even people who crossed over the aisle to vote for him are shocked at what they're seeing. Las Vegas, Craig, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. I'm honored to talk
all right.
to you.
So what's on your mind, Craig? You don't have to be honored. That's what I do for a living. So what's on your mind?
I just wonder why you're not into politics. You're brilliant. I've been listening to you for some time now.
It's a great question. I'm going to answer it because I know somebody who wants to run against somebody in the Senate. And I've warned them not to. And I'm going to tell you the reasons I will not go into politics. Let's start with even if I won. Why would I want to win and become a senator or a congressman, assuming I could? What is the end result of that? I wind up amongst the most corrupt people on earth. I wind up amongst the most disconnected, corrupt people on the planet. Is that some place I want to spend every day? I'd rather walk around in my studio in a pair of pajamas with a hangover and talk to my dog than talk to those people in the well of the Senate. With exception of five people in there, they make my flesh crawl. Why would I want to be around them? So let's start with the end result, which is that I win. That's if I won. Now let's go back to why I don't run. Why would I want to run? All they're going to do is make things up about me as they've tried to do here in talk radio for the last 15 years. Take sound bites out of context, slap them together with other things, make things up about me, try to create images of me that aren't real. Why would I want to subject myself to that, Craig?
Well, you just make so much more sense than, you know, I mean.
As I've said for years, Craig, we in talk radio are in some ways the unelected third party in this country. I have said for over 5 years now that we are ministers without portfolio, meaning we actually advise the government itself what the people think. In some ways, we have more influence than they do. In many ways, and of course, obviously, I can say things that I could never say as a politician. There are politicians out there who believe in everything I say. They can't say what I say, but I can. I can say it on talk radio. So I believe in freedom of speech. You understand?
Yes, and I also think that you outdo all the other talk show hosts like Rush Limbaugh and Hannity. You bring things, you bring more things out than they do.
Well, I'm glad you like the show. There's room for all of us. The stimulus deal has been reached. The gangsters have decided how to cut up the pie. It just happened minutes ago. I don't know that they voted it. I think they've agreed that they're going to vote on it now. The gangsters have just cut up the pie. The number is $780 billion. $780 billion. That's the emerging agreement for the bill. Came out minutes ago. Came out 15 minutes ago on the Associated Press wires. The fact of the matter is, it is the greatest travesty in the history of your life. And those of you listening to the show who will be alive 30 years from now, I probably will not be. I would say the odds are very high that I will not be. The odds are very high that anyone who is under the age of, if you're 30 or under, you'll be here in 30 years. You're going to be carrying around debt that's insupportable. You'll never pay back the debt on this bill. Never. You're going to have a diminished lifestyle. You're never going to come out of this debt. It's impossible. In fact, if you project the cost of carrying the debt on this bill, and remember, it's all debt. You say jobs. It's all debt. They're doing this by spending. So they're going into a greater debt than they're already in. And, you know, Bush was criticized for running a deficit, if you remember. And slowly but surely, he almost got us out of the deficit by 05, 06. Then he went crazy in 07 and 08, and he spent like a mad drunk man. Remember, he sent $150 billion back to the people with checks? That was a stimulus bill. Did that save us from the recession? No, it made it worse. Okay? We're going to see a disaster on our hands.
Savage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, little girl of mine.
It is the Savage Nation. We just got word that the wonderful characters in the U.S. Senate have delayed the vote for another 30 minutes. Apparently, they've gone back to ladle a little more pork in someone's lap to make sure they pass this grotesque bill. Right now, we're going to speak with a real economist as opposed to the false variety. And Dr. Neil Ferguson says that governments cling to the delusion that a crisis of excess debt can be solved by creating more debt. He joins us now on the Savage Nation. I want to remind you that Neil Ferguson, Dr. Neil Ferguson, is a professor at Harvard and at Harvard Business School. He is a fellow of Jesus College, Oxford, and a senior fellow of the Hoover Institution. Don't forget this part. His latest book is entitled The Ascent of Money, A Financial History of the World. So he knows what he's talking about, or he wouldn't be on this show right now. Dr. Ferguson, thanks for being with us on the Savage Nation.
It's a pleasure to be with you, Michael.
Well, I read your article in the Los Angeles Times, and rather than try to lead you or to paraphrase, I'd like you to please tell the audience what you think of this bill.
Well, I think you and I are in agreement that this isn't a stimulus package, it's a pork barrel package, and to an extent that is really rather horrifying. The administration said to Congress, spend around $800 billion of taxpayers' money. And this was a little bit like saying to a group of alcoholics, please could you run this bar responsibly? They took full advantage of the opportunity and thought up as many ways as they could of spending money for political purposes. And I don't think that this is likely to have the kind of economic benefits that President Obama is talking about. This is 3 million new jobs to replace the ones that have been lost since the recession began. And here's why I'm skeptical. Right now, the U.S. is looking at the biggest deficit there has been since World War II this year. It could be $1.5 trillion. It could be even higher. And the big question is, who is going to come up with this money? Because The foreign investors who were financing the deficit in the good years are retreating very rapidly. The money is drying up because global trade is collapsing. And if it's not the foreign investors and the U.S. savings rate is still pretty low, then it's probably going to be our friend Mr. Bernanke at the Federal Reserve. Now, when word gets out that the U.S. is printing money in earnest, you're going to likely see interest rates going up at the long end. In other words, the 10-year Treasury is going to start having to yield a higher return to investors.
Well, let me ask you this question. Didn't Mr. Bush send out a stimulus bill last year of $150 billion in checks to the American people, whatever? That didn't stimulate the economy. It had the opposite effect.
Right now, when you give people tax cuts, they save a substantial proportion of it because they fear losing their jobs. They fear losing their homes. They're not going to run out to Walmart. As I said in the piece, this is a crisis of excessive debt. Not only households are excessively in debt, so are banks. So, for that matter, will the federal government soon be. And we can't solve this problem by just piling on more debt. And that is the fundamental flaw in the strategy. This is the attempt to resuscitate a long-dead English economist, John Maynard Keynes.
Mm-hmm.
Dust down his book, The General Theory, published in 1936, and
mm-hmm.
hope, which is the key, hope that this will somehow work. And my feeling is that this hope will be disappointed. All we're going to do is put the frighteners into the bond market. And if bond yields go up, if long-term interest rates go up, mortgage rates will go up. And that is the thing that everybody in Washington seems to be underestimating. If you borrow on this kind of a scale, this is not without consequences. And I'm afraid we're going to see those consequences sooner rather than later.
Dr. Ferguson, in your article you say today America is Argentina, Europe is Argentina. And you're talking about Argentina in a way I understand because I know exactly what you mean. Most people don't. And I want to lead us to the next point. I've taken whatever money I have out of banks personally, and I put them in T-bills. But now I'm beginning to worry as to whether the T-bills themselves will have much value in years to come. Can you talk about T-bills per se? What are they? And what supports the value of a T-bill?
Well, a T-bill is an IOU issued by the federal government, paying at this point a very, very low return to you, Michael. I'm wondering what you're earning on those T-bills.
I'm earning probably negative is what I'm earning. I actually am earning negative when you consider the fees associated with them. But the question is, there's no support to the T-bill, then. It's pure fantasy.
The promise by the federal government that it's going to pay you nothing but not consume your principal. So this is what somebody wittily called return-free risk. The risk is that there is going to be, at the end of all of this, a surge of inflation that could reduce the real value of your investment. You're getting mm-hmm. no interest on it, or next to no interest on it.
Mm-hmm.
The alternative scenario is that the dollar really does fall off a cliff at some point this year relative to other currencies, which means if you were planning a vacation anywhere other than the United States, it's going to cost you a whole lot more. And if you wanted to import anything from the rest of the world, it's probably going to cost you a lot more. So there are all sorts of – it's the law of unintended consequences, Michael. If you believe the Keynesian story that you can just print money, borrow money to stimulate the economy and get it back onto a growth path, then you're in dreamland, because that's not the kind of crisis we're in. That kind of stuff might have worked when the federal debt was really low and the economy wasn't that exposed to international trade. But this
mm-hmm.
is not the 1930s. This is a globalized economy. And remember, countries all over the world are doing the same stuff. I mean, this isn't the only stimulus package out there. Most countries are furiously trying to get their economies going by running large deficits. So there are going to be bonds pouring onto the international market. And the consequence is almost inevitable, that there will be a huge amount of volatility out there in that market.
Well, in your article, though, you say America is Argentina today, so is Europe. And you say foreign investment banks and ordinary households are Argentina. So the only way out of this is what? Through inflation?
Well, if you think about it, crises of excessive debt are not new. It's just that we tend to associate them with South American governments rather than with ordinary American households or investment
right.
banks.
Yes.
Or from them out of the federal government. So we have to learn from the experience of those countries that have been through excess debt crises. What tends to happen is one of two things. Either if it's a debt in your own currency, you inflate your way out of it. You print money till prices go up, and then the real burden of the debt goes down because it's denominated in pesos or whatever it is. But if it's denominated in another currency, and that's usually the problem if you're Argentina, then you don't have that option, and you just default. So one of two things really seem likely to happen to me. Either we're going to get back to inflation, not immediately, because if anything, prices are heading down, but at some point in the next, let's say, 2 years, or, and this is a very frightening scenario, we are just going to have so many bankruptcies of individuals and companies that we really do re-experience the Great Depression.
Dr. Ferguson, I know some fairly wealthy people with a lot of money. They've also put a lot of their money in T-bills on one assumption, which is that it's a temporary holding place and that the U.S. government will never declare bankruptcy. First of all, let's start with the simplistic question. Is that true?
Well, governments have declared bankruptcy before in the sense that they've defaulted on their debts. I think it's unlikely that the U.S. government is going to default on T-bills or 10-year treasuries. That's not your worry. Your worry is that it's going to print money and reduce the real value of your investment. And I think
right.
What's interesting is that you and other investors are probably going to start moving your money elsewhere because you're going to see no return, a possible inflation risk in the future, and other
right.
better opportunities. I mean, let's take the example of good quality corporate debt. You could get a return on that investment if you put your money there. AAA rated corporate bond has to be a better investment right now than a T-bill.
Really?
And you're
going to
make
what do you think about gold?
Well, if you had been savvy and bought gold, let's say back in 1999, when central banks, including the Bank of England, were selling the stuff cheap, you would be a happy man now. You'd be sailing through this crisis. In a way, the gold boom has been and gone. I'd still be inclined to have some exposure to gold because of this danger of a dollar sell-off. But it would be equally smart to have some other foreign currencies as gold. I mean, I think the euro looks like it's bound to appreciate against the dollar. The yen already has. I mean, a really smart trade would have been to buy yen a year ago. So it's not just gold that is the answer here. I think you just need to be aware of the dollar at some point falling sharply against other major currencies.
Well, looking again at your article, and you actually have solutions, not just hand-wringing here. And that is mortgages, government-controlled mortgage lenders and guarantors, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac offering all borrowers, including those with fixed rates, a good deal. Lower monthly payments for a majority of U.S. households, for example. And what is the chance of that happening?
Well, ever since this crisis began, a small number of voices have been arguing for attacking the problem at its root, which is the real estate market and particularly the mortgage market. Martin Feldstein here at Harvard was one of the first to make this point, that you're tackling symptoms if you don't attack this. So I don't think it's an absolute non-starter, but it's clearly not being considered by the administration at the moment. I think we may get to this once we've exhausted the Keynesian option and it hasn't worked. But what I'm arguing for is a step to reduce mortgage payments, particularly to get people out of these disastrous adjustable rate mortgages that have been so expensive that people have been driven into foreclosure. But I think we need to offer all homeowners some respite, particularly at a time when prices are falling and the real interest burden could begin to rise in quite a painful way. We do have the tools to do that. Through Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, we can, in effect, do what happened in the 1930s and create some kind of nationally integrated mortgage market, get everybody onto a fixed rate, get the rates down. This is what used to be called a conversion operation. When you say to the creditors, look, times have changed. You thought you were going to get 7%, 8%, even 9%. Sorry, this is a new era. You're going to have to accept a lower rate for the sake of our economic survival. The other thing that has to happen, though, Michael, is we have to radically attack the problem of the banks. Because there are some banks out there that are so highly leveraged and they have so many toxic assets on their balance sheets that they're basically insolvent. And no doubt Timothy Geithner, Treasury Secretary, will come up with some way of massaging these poor zombies into something resembling life.
But you say they're talking about a bad bank, which I heard about 2 weeks ago, to buy the toxic assets that the Troubled Asset Relief Program couldn't cure, but you say that no one seems to have noticed that there already is a bad bank. It's called the Federal Reserve System, and its balance sheet has grown from just over $900 billion to more than $2 trillion since this crisis began. Our debt has been trebled since this crisis began. And where are they going to put these toxic assets now?
But the idea is obviously to create some new institution that takes the pressure off the Fed, which has been buying toxic assets from the banks. It's been doing it quietly. We don't know what it's paid for them. We don't even know what they are because the Fed won't say. But the feeling clearly is that it's this is no too big a job for the Fed. So you create a bad bank. Now, what is this bad bank going to do except for take taxpayers' money and overpay for worthless, crappy paper? Excuse my language. That seems to be the game. I think it would be much more sensible to say to the banks, look, you guys are basically insolvent. But this is not, of course, true for all banks, but it's certainly true for some banks. The equity holders, the stockholders are gone. You know, their money is gone. These banks are insolvent. The capital is wiped out. The bondholders, the people who've lent the banks money, they probably need to take a haircut. We would call this restructuring in almost any other sector of the economy. You need to restructure these firms because they are basically bust. We don't want them to fold completely because that would have huge systemic effects. You know, we imagine the bankruptcy of Bank of America. You thought Lehman Brothers was bad?
Oh, my God. No, I can't imagine the results of that. That would be a house of falling cards that would probably never stop. It would be sort of a Chernobyl implosion. That's what worries me deeply, Dr. Ferguson. But before we go, let's go back to the so-called stimulus bill. You've probably studied it in greater detail than I have. I've listened to various speeches. I've read some of it. I would be fibbing if I said I read all of it. But even Dianne Feinstein, a liberal Democrat today, and a very powerful one at that, said she cannot support the bill at this time. That was earlier today, because there's too much pork and very few jobs being created. Is that your fundamental analysis of this bill?
Yes. A lot of this money is just absurd. I can't remember if they're still giving the National Endowment for the Arts money, but that seemed to be symptomatic of the way in which it was going. $2 billion for childcare subsidies last time I looked. There's no question that at least some of the money is going to have a stimulative effect. It's not all pork, but the pork is egregious and has been added on in ways that won't deliver any significant short-run benefit. Much of this money won't create a single job this year, but what it will do is it will create entitlements that will be ongoing. So instead of getting a short-run stimulus, the economy is just going to get another long-run burden. This is an opportunity for the Democrats to grow the government, and they are seizing it. And I can't believe it's going to have any positive short-run effect. It will certainly have long-run negative effects. So I share her skepticism.
Well, this is most important because they're about to pass the $817 billion version. They're going to vote on it in about 10 minutes. Dr. Ferguson is a true economist. He's a professor at Harvard University and Harvard Business School. He's also a senior fellow of the Hoover Institution. His latest book, which you must read, is The Ascent of Money, A Financial History of the World. Dr. Ferguson, you seem to be a man out there who knows what he's talking about, but I doubt that you've been invited to deliver your opinions to President Obama.
Well, there are some signs of hope. I have been asked down to Washington to talk to the Senate Foreign Relations Committee next week, so maybe I can draw their attention to the international risks of turning America into Argentina.
Well, I want to thank you, Dr. Ferguson. It's a real pleasure, and I know that it took you quite a bit to get on the show today because you've just come back from London, and I want to thank you for taking the time to be on the program.
My pleasure, Michael. Have a great weekend.
I will try. I'll keep my eye on those T-bill rates.
Yeah, you might want to think about redeploying your money at some point.
But wait, don't go. You said, let me see if I can catch up with you on that. You said corporate bonds. Is that what you suggested?
If you look at the top quality companies, the AAA rated U.S. corporations, their bonds are really very cheap right now. It's almost like the market is expecting half the corporations in the S&P 500 to go bust. And that just looks like a mispricing. I think there's a lot of risk among weaker companies in a crisis like this, but there are companies that are not going to go bust here.
Top quality AAA corporate bonds. Is that what I'm – then I'll study them this weekend.
I think that's got to be your weekend homework. But make sure you have some downtime there, Michael, because we don't want to all get too depressed here. Depression is depressing.
I have very little downtime in these times because I've never lived through times like this before. Dr. Ferguson, thanks a million for taking the trouble to be with us on the Savage Nation. Your erudition was well appreciated.
Many thanks.
Bye now. Well, you've just heard it from a man who knows what he's talking about. He's not a politician. He doesn't have an axe to grind. He says they're all wrong. You cannot cure debt by incurring debt. I'll be right back.
Savage. I have had very little to do with this bill in the sense of writing it. I think most of us feel somewhat the same way. I am growing increasingly concerned about the bill as to whether it's really going to be a stimulus. I come from a state which has more people unemployed today than the populations of over a dozen states.
And she's not for the bill at that point earlier today. She's a liberal Democrat. So that tells you, if you do your homework, you find out this is nothing but ugly, naked pork barrel spending. Now, before this hour rolls to a conclusion, it's been a heck of an hour, I want you to remember a story that you shouldn't forget. Please go to my website, michaelsavage.com, and take a look at the beast of Michigan, Senator Debbie Stabenow, who is the most vocal opponent of conservative talk radio. She said she wants the fairness doctrine in any form it could be passed to destroy any opposition to the liberals. And you say, well, that's because she's a liberal. No, there's an actual pecuniary reason. She has a husband. His name is Thomas Athens. He's the co-founder of the Liberal Talk USA Radio Network. He also led programming at Air America, the failed network. He was arrested in a prostitution bust, and the poor prostitute, the young girl, was sent to prison while he got away with it. He was not arrested because he, quote, cooperated with the police. That shows you how justice is played out when your wife is a senator. The young girl goes to jail, the 21-year-old girl goes to jail, and the guy, the John, skated. Now, you would normally think that the National Organization for Women would put aside their bias and say, this is not fair. But of course you know they're biased, and they're not going to say anything in favor of this poor prostitute. But he got off with it. The big thing is not the prostitution. It's that he was the man who programmed Air America. Liberal failed. He's the co-founder of Liberal Talk USA Radio Network, a competitor to conservatives. Follow the money. This is crime.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Expecting in this era of bipartisanship, given the president's campaign and his comments, was that he would offer his idea, we would offer ours, and we would put them together and come up with a result. Ours are fixed housing first. That's not in the bill. Ours are make it temporary. They rejected that without a Democratic vote.
Heavenly shades of night are falling.
Well, the porkers are at it again. The deal looks like it's done. It's $780 billion. We can't even imagine what that is. It's $1.2 trillion with interest, at least. The voters are furious. There's going to be a phenomenal backlash. The Democrats should understand that this is not a permanent mandate of theirs. And I believe that the only way they're going to stay in office after this grotesque abandonment of principle and abandonment of responsibility, the only way they're going to stay in office is by granting amnesty to illegal aliens who will 99% vote for Democrats, and we will have absolute socialism in America for the rest of our history. The day they grant amnesty to the millions and millions of illegal aliens, they are going to assure themselves a permanency on the order of Hugo Chavez in Venezuela, and then America is over, and they're going to do it. Make no mistake about it. Guys like Biden, guys like Reid, they don't care about America, in my opinion. They care only about power. and they care about absolute power, and they are ruthless, and they will do anything to maintain that power. And if that power means selling America down the river by granting amnesty to illegal aliens to gain more Democrat votes, they will do that. And we will have a Chavez-like nation, and the middle class will leave this country. The middle class will flee, as the Argentinians have fled, to Miami, San Francisco, wherever they could go. We will be a broken nation, as sure as I'm standing here. That's my opinion. So don't assume that this stimulus deal is going to be magic just because you're one of those clones who took the Kool-Aid and think that Obama's the magnificent. The fact of the matter is, in the last hour, we had a great real economist on, not Obama, who's never run a hot dog stand. Obama knows zilch, nothing about economics, nothing. Obama only knows about shooting staples into telephone poles to put up posters. That's what a community organizer does. Obama is a glib speaker. But Obama is not an economist. We had Dr. Neil Ferguson on, professor at Harvard University, Harvard Business School, and he knows money. And he says that the $780 billion stimulus package is wrong. It will not stimulate job creation. Even Dianne Feinstein said it will not stimulate job creation. She said that earlier. She understands what's going to happen to her. She understands that the people are not that stupid. She understands that there are people out there who can add two and two and come up with four. She understands that not everybody's an illegal alien who doesn't speak English. The fact of the matter is, this is a travesty. And those of you, as I said in the last hour, who will be here in 30 years, and I won't, I mean, it's probably 99% sure that I won't be here in 30 years. And that's, you know, quite a distance unto itself. But those of you who are 30 years old, probably to a 90th percentile, will be here in 30 years. You will not be enjoying the lifestyle that they're promising you, I can guarantee you. You will not be living the life that you have become accustomed to. Your lifestyle must change. And change for the better it will. Think back. Think back, if you will. I mean, I'm older than you, so maybe I'm thinking back. Maybe it wasn't true for you. I think by the time you were already a kid, we were living in such debt that perhaps you don't even know what reality is. Reality is my life. My life is reality. I come from an immigrant family. My father came here with next to nothing. And I'm not going to give you a heart and flower song here. Came here with next to nothing, opened a tailor shop, worked for 7 years, sent for the wife and two children, had another child here and died at age 47 from overwork from a heart attack. That was the beginning of this family in this country. Man-child in the promised land is me. I am the first in the family, in the male line, to have gone to college. I am the first to have earned a PhD. I'm the first to have achieved any form of international and national success. I am man-child in the promised land, so I have come from the old world to the new world. I have one foot in the old world. And the way I grew up was this. My father was born into poverty. He had a tiny little store. He actually started with a pushcart in New York slums. I'm not ashamed to admit it. You try starting with a pushcart. You go laugh at the man in New York pushing a Frankfurt a cart. Go laugh in his face. Go laugh at the man from Nigeria who's trying to make a living. Go laugh at him and see what you get in return. It doesn't mean he was a small man, and it doesn't mean he was a loser. It means he was a poor man. There's a huge difference. Any more than it means that a man in a limousine is a big man and a great man, it doesn't mean that a man with a pushcart is a small man and a mean man. The fact of the matter is, he started with that and worked his way up. And then he had a tiny little store, and in that little store he was able to provide for his family. And he bought his first house in the early 50s, a little brick attached house, $14,500, I believe, was the cost of the house. And my mother lived, well, you know, I won't give you every detail of the thing, but he put me through college. He put my sister through college. My mother never worked. And when he died, also young, he died in his 50s from a heart attack, from overwork, probably from smoking, worrying about how to make a living because there were no government handouts. And, of course, he would rather have shot himself than taken a nickel in government handouts, because that's what my family told me, is that when they were poor, they never took a nickel from the New York City Welfare Department, while others who came along later did. I was also told that when they lived in the so-called slums of the Lower East Side, which are now quite fashionable, the houses, the apartments, rather, were clean. The linoleum was polished. The furniture was rubbed. There was no dirt in the hallways. And she said soon after they left, the next wave came in, and they started throwing burning mattresses out of the windows because the city didn't give them enough money so they could sit there like the slobs that they were, drinking beer and using drugs and living on welfare. But you see, things changed in America with the advent of the welfare state in the 1960s, and they changed for the worse. They changed for the worse, not for the better. We now have an entire generation of bums who think that they are entitled to certain things. Do I need to have to go any further than this animal with the octuplets? Is that a story that is something to behold in a country? Is that insane that they would permit a person like this who cannot support herself, let alone a child, to have eight children after having six before? Is there something sane about a nation that has doctors that would implant eight embryos into such a woman? Yeah, there's something wrong here. But that's an example of the entitlement society. And so, as I said, let me just conclude this little a monologue for you for a minute. The way we lived was this. We had a small house, and the small house was 20 feet wide and 100 feet deep. The house wasn't 100 feet deep. The lot was. It was probably 60 feet deep. And two stories, one bathroom upstairs, a half bathroom downstairs, three bedrooms upstairs, and that was it. But you know what? The house was filled with life. Neighbors came and went. Relatives came and went. My mother and a little four-burner stove could cook six meals at a time. I didn't feel that we were poor. I felt that we were rich because I had come from a little apartment before that. So to me, it was a big house. It's not a matter of the size of the house. It's a matter of what's in the house. But we had one car. The point is we had one car. And because we didn't have a lot of money, we didn't go on vacations with airplanes when I was a kid. They went up to the Catskill Mountains by car, and he put all of his summer belongings on the top of the car. I can remember to this day tying them down with the ropes. And it was a huge trip, 2 hours away. It was an epic journey. To me, it was the Conestoga wagon crossing the Sierra Nevada, going up on Highway 17. And we went to a small vacation rental bungalow, as they called it, a one-room unit. That was the vacation. They didn't go to Las Vegas. They didn't go to Florida. They didn't go to France. They didn't go to Cannes. They didn't go to Tuscany, you know, to sit and drink wine. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. But we didn't die. We had a good time. We had a wonderful time. The fact of the matter is you can live with one car. You can live with no vacations. You can live without eating out 17 times a week. You can just live with some different values, for God's sakes. You've got to learn how to live differently. Now, the fact of the matter is it's not easy to do that when you've been brainwashed since childhood to have it now, buy it now, do it now, feel it now, get it now, spend it now. Here's the card, take another card. No problem, no problem, no problem. You're in debt, here's more debt. Don't worry about it, no problem. Buy it now, have it now. Go there now, have this now. Well, after 30 years of living like that, it's very hard to take the addict, the credit addict, off the drug called credit. But our nation is a credit addict. We've been living on borrowed time and borrowed money, and the piper is about to be paid. And the leader of this pack of liars is Barack Hussein Obama. He is the end line of this insanity and this fantasy. That is how we got here from there. I'll be right back.
Few occasions in listening to what was propounded by those who have come up with this bipartisan agreement, we had to swallow real hard. But it was all done in good faith.
This is Harry Reid complaining that it's only $780 billion. He's complaining it's too small.
Great country.
Pelosi almost destroyed the bill with her imperious manner.
Faced with this grave and
this great country, yeah. All right. Well, you heard the interview with Dr. Ferguson earlier. And he believes, and he's an expert, that this is nonsense. It's utter nonsense that you can't buy your way out of debt with more debt. And let's hear Harry for another minute. I don't need to listen to more of it. I know what hot air is.
We've had a large number of amendments debated and voted upon.
All right, he's going to give you the polished job now, how wonderful it is and how bipartisan it is, and let's put it behind us and let's root for America, rah-rah, sis boom-bah. I don't want to hear any more. I don't want to hear any more. Play See the USA in a Chevrolet with Donna Reed.
See the USA in your Chevrolet. America is asking you to call. Drive your Chevrolet through the USA.
Yeah, that's when there was still a Chevrolet. That was another time. It's like the Gillette Friday night fights. Turn it off. Everything was different. It was a different world. Page 72 of Psychological Nudity by Michael Savage. And I talk about this, about the other world. And did you know that in my book, many of you bought it, many, many thousands of you bought this book. Far more of you bought my book than bought Nancy Pelosi's book, even though she was on Oprah Winfrey and all of the other shows that think that they control the book business. Factor of 10 more, 10 times more bought my book than bought her book with no publicity whatsoever. It's not even in bookstores. But I want to go on to what I wrote. Listen to this. When this book was published last September, that means I finished it last April, May, June. And I'm talking about now, and I say, remember this story? Bush comes up with a mortgage plan that will freeze certain subprime interest rates for 5 years. This is page 72. Now, in the face of it, you say, wow, how compassionate. A three-pronged solution to stem the flow of mortgage foreclosures. Now, let me ask you something. How many of these who are about to go into foreclosure are illegal aliens? Has anyone asked that question but me? Answer, no. Now, this was written when I was the only one asking it. The government, as you well know, was forcing banks to lend to people who were not only illegal aliens, but also unqualified for a mortgage. And if the banks didn't lend the money to people who didn't qualify, they were going to be sued by various divisions of the U.S. government, I wrote. So now the banks were about to go belly up, and who was going to bail them out? The very same government that said you must lend money to them. Now, who's going to pay for the bailout? You and I. You and I wrote. Now, what about stronger lending standards? When I was young and I wanted to get a mortgage, I couldn't afford one. They wouldn't give me one. Why? Because I didn't qualify. Why couldn't I qualify? I didn't have sufficient income, therefore I couldn't buy a house. But you see, everything's changed in the new politically correct America. So you have a socialist-like government that said to banks for years, you lend money to illegal aliens and unqualified minorities or we will sue you. In fact, you can't even ask the so-called citizenship status of a potential borrower or we'll sue you for racism. So the banks were over a barrel. They said, but, and the government said, we'll give it to you in the you-know-what unless you lend it to the illegal alien, unless you lend it to people who don't qualify. And now we have a so-called subprime crisis, I wrote. So Michael Savage again asks the question no one is going to ask. How many of these people in a subprime mortgage crisis are illegal aliens? How many of these people are those that banks were forced to lend to? But it doesn't stop Bush from telling us that we have to pay for it. Listen, and then I quote Bush back last year when he said, some lenders made loans that borrowers did not understand, especially in the subprime sector. Whoa, hold on, I wrote. Some lenders made loans that borrowers didn't understand? Is the president fooling you? What's there not to understand? Now he's taking the side of the people who they were forced to lend money to? You see why I said 2007 was a very bad year? On page 73 of Psychological Nudity, I conclude with this. The first mortgage I ever heard about was the one my father secured in 1954 and 1955. He bought a house for $14,500 in Queens, New York. You had to put down 20 or 25% at the very least in those days. So what would you have to put down then? About $3,000? It was a lot of money in those days. And then he took out a mortgage. Then he paid off the house. He had to qualify for the mortgage. And if he couldn't qualify, they wouldn't give it to him. And he paid off the house, and that was the end of it. In those days, my father wouldn't buy a car on time because he said that was cheating. Can you imagine how those old-timers thought? A mortgage you had to pay off because who had cash to pay a whole house off? Nobody. Nobody did unless you worked for some people on a certain street that you ate spaghetti in. But the fact is, nobody that we knew had that kind of cash hidden beyond the wallpaper in Belrose, Queens. So you had to take a mortgage. But a car was another story. You bought a used car and you paid cash. Why? Because if you bought it on time, you were cheating. Because you couldn't really afford it and you were a faker. By that thinking, 99.9% of the people on the road today wouldn't have a car. That's page 73 of the story by Michael Savage. I was the first one in the American media to talk about that crisis, the subprime crisis, in that way, particularly since it was written long before the so-called pundits started talking about Barney Frank and Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. But now everybody knows the cause, which has already been swept under the rug, and the very people who caused the problem have now elected the porker-in-chief. The porker-in-chief being Barack Hussein Obama, who will be remembered in history for, amongst other things, having bankrupted America with a $780 billion pork barrel bill, which is the largest expenditure in the history of all governments in the history of the world. That is his legacy. His legacy will be the biggest government spender in the history, not only of America, but of the world. Now, if it would save the economy, we wouldn't be talking about it, but experts, such as Dr. Ferguson, who I had on the show, believe it will do the opposite. Many experts believe it will do the opposite, and most people who've studied the bill, except those of you who did not do your homework, understand that about 90% of it is pork and only 10% of it will actually create jobs. And that's the way the world turns today on the Savage Nation. Who is going to pay for it? Your children's children's children.
Savage.
Darling, you sent me. I know you sent me. Darling, you.
Thus far, not one of the stooges in the SEC has gone to prison or been arrested and indicted. Not one of the people, the watchdogs who let this happen, have been investigated. Thus far, Madoff is still living in his Park Avenue apartment. Thus far, Chris Cox is still enjoying the freedom of the United States of America. Thus far, not one of the crooks in Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac has paid for it. Thus far, we're still holding the bill ourselves. You know that there's no justice in this country. You know that very well. And you know that the people at the top never, ever pay for their crimes, especially now. You know, there was a time that you did pay for your crimes, but not anymore. When you have such an imperious House of Representatives as we do today, they can get away with virtual, well, I'll pause right here. Now, they say that even a stopwatch is right twice a day, and that goes for New York Congressman, the far leftist Gary Ackerman, who got it right yesterday when he attacked the jerks at the SEC who sat quietly and stared blankly as Ackerman unleashed a tirade in clip 15.
Was to protect investors and detect fraud quickly. How'd that work out? What went wrong? It seems to me a private, with all of your investigators and all of your agency and everything that you all describe, one guy with a few friends and helpers discovered this thing nearly a decade ago, led you to this pile of dung that is Bernie Madoff and stuck your nose in it, and you couldn't figure it out.
Yeah, well, now the next one, if you don't mind. I shouldn't
have
to call
for it. You couldn't find your backside with two hands if the lights were on. Could you explain yourselves?
And they sat there like the bureaucratic dunces that they are. But all right, but they should be in prison. They should have been taken out in handcuffs. Some of them were smeared or paid off. Susan Collins, another one that belongs running an ice cream parlor in Maine, but instead in our wonderful country today, she's actually a Republican senator. This one should open a Carvel stand somewhere in the district closest to Quebec. That's what she's – would you like vanilla on – would you like some syrup on that? That's all she's fit for. Listen to this clown.
It was a Christmas tree upon which every member virtually had hung his or her favorite project. It was bloated, expensive, and ineffective. This compromise greatly improves.
Yeah, all right, turn her off. Yeah, right, you're celebrating an $800 billion bill. You hear like they did something great. Can you believe these people? Can you believe they cut it from 900 to about 870? Whoa, what a killer that is. What a great job you did today, Susan. You're a real fiscal conservative. You pared it down from 900 to 780 or 850 to 780. What a job you did for the American people. You know, if you were the enemy of America and sitting in a cave somewhere or God knows an apartment in America watching this and you see this kind of person is a U.S. senator and you see her shaking up there with that voice, the ice cream parlor voice, or you see the beast from Michigan, Debbie Stabenow, getting up there saying that the only opposition to people like her in conservative talk radio should be turned off with a fairness doctrine when her husband runs the competitive liberal network, you'd be laughing. You know it's only a matter of time until you're going to get the orders to strike again because you realize that a bunch of women like this are incapable of defending the country. You realize that men, I heard men today of anything like this, people whose sexual orientation I never paid much attention to, it seems to me have come out of the closet on this floor of the Senate today. I can't believe this. It's as though I woke up in another country that was always here under the surface. But let's put aside the sexual orientation of some of the men and the lack of qualifications of most of the senators. Can you tell me with any certainty that you know that this stimulus bill is going to stimulate the economy? Well, if you do, then you don't know what you're talking about. Because even Biden said there's a very an average chance that it will work. He doesn't know if it'll work. He said there's only a, I think he said a 70% chance that it will work. I would say it's a 30% chance it'll work to some extent. But let me ask you something. If most of the money that's being allotted today isn't even going to be spent for a few years, how is that? How does that work? Why did they rush it then? The answer is because the socialist communists, the neo-Marxists as I call them, who have seized the reins of government, have tried to empower themselves forever. That's how. It had nothing to do with stimulating the economy, because if you wanted to do it 1 year at a time, you do it 1 year at a time, and then if it doesn't work, you change it the next year. You say, well, this worked, keep that, add to it. That didn't work, let's take it out. That's if you're an honest person. But since you well know there are a very few honest people in the Senate, they didn't want that. What they wanted to do was reward Acorn. They wanted to reward the street thugs in Acorn. They wanted to reward all of the Bill Ayers-like people in the United States of America who put him in power. They wanted third parties who contributed to Obama's campaign to get back paid $5, $10 on the dollar through this kind of graft and corruption that was common in the Chicago that Obama came up in. And now we have seen the Chicagoization of the United States of America. We have seen pay for play on a scale that would make Blagojevich look like an Eagle Scout. Only it's been foisted upon America, not by Blagojevich, who's been impeached and thrown out of the governorship, but by Barack Hussein Obama, who learned at his knee. Do you understand what I just said to you? Because what I said to you, you could take every word I just said to you to the bank. Chicago, Philip, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, Mike, I agree with you 100%. I can't understand how these congressmen and senators and House of Representative people could sit there and not do a thing against these people that have created this fiasco of this United States of America.
Well, we're all sitting here shaking our heads. We cannot believe what was done today. And the fact of the matter is that there's a tremendous voter discontent with Obama right now. My suspicion is that the, there's a thing called buyer remorse. I coined the word, and I don't know if I never heard it before. I used it 2 weeks ago, voter remorse. I believe that the level of voter remorse is astronomical right now with this character called Obama. We knew that he was a fiction of the Democrat machine and of the media, and we suspected that he could never hold us hold up to the standards that he proposed he could. But the fact of the matter is now we see him for what he is. He's just a backroom dealmaker from Chicago, and the fact is they brought Chicago to the United States of America. Chicago, Bob, welcome to the program. Do you agree or disagree with me?
Oh, yeah, I totally agree with you. I really feel that what I'm going to give you here is the smoking gun. I'm a conservative Democrat. I'm from Chicago, and I feel that I was betrayed. I was in a meeting after Obama got elected, and I was told by the Democratic officials in that meeting that we were going to get billions of dollars that was going to come down the pike our way, and what we were to do with it was we're going to build a army of Democratic patronage jobs that
right.
is going to completely freeze out the Republicans forever and ever.
Right. That's exactly what this is. This is a complete destruction of the two-party system.
It's a job patronage system, the same one that they have in Chicago. And the reason
exactly.
why everyone's asking, why isn't some of that money being released until 2011 and 2012? Because it needs to be released at the time that gets close to the election so they don't go blow the money and spend it. So they said that they're going to hold some back, and then that's where the real bucks will be spent. We'll
yes.
be right back into the election. So what's
I know that. You know, it's shocking that the American people are this dumb, but I'm not shocked. Today is February 6th. On Monday, February 2nd, I did a monologue on the Savage Nation, which I have in my hand, called The United States of Blagojevich. And it goes right back to what you just said, which is that Barack Obama, who promised us the cleanest, most honest, most transparent presidential administration in U.S. history, has just created the United States of Blagojevich. He has taken Chicago to a national level. All the backroom dealing, the lobbying, the payoffs, and the favoritism that Chicago is known for is now being played out on a national level. You agree with me, of course.
Oh, yeah, totally. And it's not a stimulus package. It's not pork. It's a job patronage system that's going to be
I get it. I understand what patronage is. It's, you know, Mayor Daley said the other day he's not going to disclose what Chicago is getting out of the bill. He refuses to because then the newspaper men, he said, will start digging around in it as though he lives in a tyranny where there should be no newspaper men who dig around in what the politicians propose. How has he gotten away with this all these years in Chicago? Again, I think I know, through the patronage system. Is that correct?
Bigger than the United States Army. That's what we were told. There's going to be more employees working for the Democrats in this patronage system than the United States Army. And the jobs are going to be camouflaged in a million different ways, whether you're working for the city, you're working for the state. But when the election comes around, you're going to be obligated to go out and get that vote like they did with Acorn, but on a much larger scale. So I just wanted to say that because I was really depressed when they told me, because I really felt that they betrayed
us. Well, Bob, you should be depressed because this is only stage one of the Democrat plan to hydrogen bomb America's system. The next stage is going to be the final one. The next bomb that goes off is the granting of amnesty to the illegal aliens, 99% of whom are too ignorant to understand what's going on and will vote through the patronage system only for Democrats for the rest of their lives. That's the end of the two-party system for the rest of the lives of the people listening to this show.
Yeah, and if Dr. Sands, I've done nothing in my life. At least I've informed them that what that bill really is. It's a job patronage system.
Well, Nancy Pelosi should be proud that she has brought Mussolini's government to the United States of America. She's done her job very well in creating a dictatorship of the socialist left, and we will have to see how this plays out. All I can tell you is that this is a very sad day in America because there is no two-party system at this time. They tell you that they took an $850 billion bill and reduced it to $780, and you got a bargain. You ever hear any? What a bargain they just gave you. They told you just got a bargain. Who's speaking now, guys? Which one is up now? And no one's up now. All Inspector, the spectacle himself. The disgraced All Inspector, the suitcase man. Let's hear All Inspector.
An unemployment rate which is rising. 2,800,000 jobs lost last year.
Oh, he's going to tell us why we needed it. You too. You fraud, you Philadelphia lawyer, you double talking fake. You double talking Republican in name only, you. Crooked.
Cited for the destruction of.
You're more crooked than a divining rod.
And
the only difference is a divining rod that could show us where water is, you bum, you. Tell us about Ira Einhorn. Tell us about Ira Einhorn and how you helped ferret him out of America after he was accused of killing his girlfriend and putting her in a trunk, Arlen. Tell America how you were a Democrat all your life, a double-talking lawyer from the slums of Philadelphia, and then you released Ira Einhorn and got him out of jail and got him out of the country. Tell us about that, Arlen. I'll be right back.
Be devastating.
Savage.
Later, alligator. After a while, crocodile.
You've just watched the hijacking of the United States of America by the corrupt Democrat Party under Nancy Mussolini. 1-800-449-8255. The two-party system is effectively over. We have gone from La Dolce Vita to La Vida Loca in one generation. From La Dolce Vita to La Vida Loca in one generation. For those of you who know a little bit of Spanish and a little bit of Italian, now you know a little bit of sense. This entire economy was a product of La Dolce Vita. Have it now, the sweet life. Have it now, eat the sugar. And now we are in the crazy life. As I say, from the iconic La Dolce Vita to La Vida Loca. So we have is the crazy life. Thank you very much. 1-800-449-8255 is the phone number. We have Chicago, the Chicagoization of America, as I said on Monday. And it's not over yet. It's just begun. This is just the beginning now. If you take a look who they're trying to put into the the Justice Department under Eric Holder, who unto himself should never have been appointed. He gave a pass to the 6 Puerto Rican terrorists. He granted a pardon to Mark Rich. Now he's going to put an assistant attorney general in. Your hair will stand up. He's, to me, looks like he's owned by the pornography industry, the abortion industry, the radical homosexual industry. This is now going to be the assistant attorney general. There's been a wholesale hijacking of the United States of America by this far-left neo-Marxist Barack Hussein Obama, as we warned you it would occur in this country. But you've only seen the beginning. This is only the beginning. This is not the end. With all this money they've just appropriated now, this is only the beginning of what they're going to do to you, not the end. And so, as the Greeks used to say, it's good to be alive in interesting times, but even the Greeks understood there was hemlock. Here the Democrats have not yet reached the point of saying the talk show hosts who oppose them should be taking hemlock, but they want them to take the equivalent of hemlock. They want them to take the hemlock called the Fairness Doctrine. But we're going to fight back, and the beast from Michigan who's going to lead the charge, Debbie Stabenow, who was on a failed talk show host show the other day, said, oh, definitely there's going to be a Fairness Doctrine. What you don't know about the beast from Michigan, Senator Debbie Stabenow, is that her husband was arrested for having a tryst with a prostitute at a Metropolitan Detroit hotel. But her husband has a little job category as well, a little job category. See, her husband, who was with the hooker, who, by the way, wasn't arrested because he cooperated with the police in Troy, Michigan. Shows you what the police in Troy are worth. She went to jail. The poor young hooker went to jail. But Tom Athens, Stabenow's husband, was not charged because he assisted in the case. He never even had to testify because the hooker pled guilty. That's how it's done when your wife is a beast and a senator. The beast from Michigan who wants to kill talk radio that opposes her has a husband arrested with a hooker. But that's not the beginning. That's only the beginning of the story. He's the co-founder of the Liberal Talk USA Radio Network, meaning he's a competitor of us in the conservative media. And he was the lead programmer at the flopped Air America, the liberal network that declared bankruptcy. So this is a business deal. It has nothing, almost nothing to do with anything but business. Not only do we expose the corruption of the Democrats and the Republicans when necessary, but we do the job that the media is supposed to do, which is to be the watchdog for the American people. And that's why the beast from Michigan wants us closed down, as does Nancy Pelosi. Anybody who has something to hide wants talk radio ended as you know it. The way we're going to fight back is we're going to talk about Debbie Stabenow, the beast from Michigan, and her husband, Tom, who was arrested in a motel for the hooker thing. Even though he was released, it's on the police blotter. And the fact that he is a failed executive in liberal talk radio should stop this in its tracks. Once the American people hear that the beast from Michigan has a husband who's a competitor who has a failed liberal programming network, I believe there's going to be an uproar in the country like you've never seen. And while the people right now are bottled up and corked up and shut up and blocked up, I'm telling you, if this keeps up, there's going to be more than you can imagine happen in this country. There will not be 1,000 points of light, as we were promised in the first Bush administration, but there'll be something very close to it. But I don't think it's going to be 1,000 points of light. I think you're going to have a prairie fire erupt in this country, all over this nation, if this keeps up. I believe you're going to have 1,000 little rebellions break out in this country if this keeps up. I believe if the beasts like Debbie Stabenow now try to take away the last outlet for the American conservative, the American patriot, the American independent, if they try to take that away, there's going to be 1,000 prairie fires breaking out across this nation, at least 1,000. I believe that the people need their outlet. I believe the people need a way to vent. And I believe that if this is taken away from them, their last vestige of freedom of speech, their last place to interact with the media, I believe there will be at least 1,000 prairie fires breaking out across this country. And I rest my case. It would be possibly the worst thing imaginable that the Democrats could try. It will not only have a backlash effect, it will have much more than a backlash effect, I can assure you, ladies and gentlemen. And believe me, I don't have to lead the charge. The people themselves, every one of you listening to this show, even the honest liberals out there understand what danger you're in when you have the beast from Michigan, whose husband is a failed executive on the liberal side, speaking about closing down the opposition, not only for political reasons, which of course is financial, but for financial reasons themselves. No, ladies and gentlemen, we have nothing to fear but fear itself. We certainly do not fear the living embodiment of the pork barrel bill herself. In fact, if you want to paint a picture of this pork barrel bill. Just take a look at Debbie Stabenow. She is the living proof.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
This is David Obey, the chairman of the House Appropriations Committee, and he does not like being asked about earmarks.
With all due respect, that's the least important question facing us on putting together this package.
Does that mean, though, that Congress will have less control and less, in fact, ability to say, you spent it the way we wanted you to spend it?
Of course it does. Of course it does. So what? This is an emergency, and so with all due respect, we've got to simply find a way to get this done as fast as possible and as well as possible, and that's what we're doing.
Aren't there 1,000 ways that this money could be spent badly, though?
There are 1,000 ways it can be spent badly. There are 1,000 ways it can be spent well. So what's new?
Everything we do and everything I do is subject to improvement. Michelle reminds me every day how imperfect I am. So I welcome this debate, but come on, we are not.
You hear the frustration in those Democratic voices? Is it any coincidence that Barack Obama and that lackey Democrat David Obey are getting upset about their stimulus package being questioned, while at the same time Demon Cats are talking about bringing regulation to the radio airwaves, meaning censorship? The last place where opposition is vigorous against this move towards a Cuban-style socialist government. Just listen to Obama's voice again when he's pitching for this pork barrel package. You can hear in Obama's voice that he's stunned that there's so much vocal opposition to his plan. Just listen to it.
So I welcome this debate, but come on, we are not going to get relief by
the community organizer has never, ever encountered such opposition. How dare we? And where has the most vociferous and consistent opposition to the socialization, the wimpification, the racialization of the United States come from? Talk radio. Where has the loudest and fiercest opposition to the debasement of American culture come from? Talk radio. Where did opposition to that outrageous immigration bill and that ridiculous Dubai ports deal come from? Talk radio. And now Senator Debbie Stabenow, the beast from Michigan, says she wants to have standards in talk radio. Yeah, we'll leave it to you, Debbie, to talk about censoring opposition to your twisted view of what the United States should be as standards. Do you know what this woman's all about? Do you know about her husband who traded sex for money? The girl went to jail. He didn't go to jail, the senator's husband. And now he wants censorship through his wife, the beastly wife. Take a guess who the husband is. Thomas Athens, co-founder of the competitive liberal Talk USA radio network. So it's not about fairness. It's not about fairness and balance. It's about putting out the competition. Shame on you. You should be in prison, Debbie. All right, play the clip.
I think it's absolutely time to pass a standard. Now, whether it's called the fairness standard, whether it's called something else, I absolutely think it's time to be bringing accountability to the airwaves. I mean, our new president has talked rightly about accountability and transparency and, you know, that we all have to step up and be responsible. And I think in this case, there needs to be some accountability and standards put in place. I have already had some discussions with colleagues, and, you know, I feel like that's going to happen. Yep.
It's going to happen. Yep. Did you hear that flippancy in her voice? Do you hear that? She sounds like an angry wife who wants to stop arguing, but she's going to brood and she's going to scheme. And that's exactly what the Democrats are doing. Scheming like women to stop all people from even discussing their opposition. Yes, this stimulus package is moving forward, but Obama and his fellow demon cats can't even countenance what little and ineffective resistance they've gotten so far. On one hand, they're going to threaten financial ruin or worse if their plans don't go forward. And they're going to seek to silence their opposition in order to be effective. I don't think so. But you should keep that in mind whenever a liberal is cloaking their intentions in soft language like standards. It's all about dictatorship. One of the many complaints about the newest stimulus bills in the Senate, besides the pork, is that it allows contractors to use workers without having to check their legal status. In other words, illegal aliens. The House version of the stimulus bill has a provision to prevent this, but the Whigs in the Senate specifically took this out. Robert Rector is with the Heritage Foundation, has been looking into this issue, and he also says there are easy, cheap, and accurate ways to check legal status.
Thanks, Michael. One of the most interesting aspects of the Senate stimulus bill is that it very explicitly allows that for the money in the bill to be spent to benefit illegal immigrants. Under the bill, there's about $100 billion that will be spent on government construction projects over the next 5 years or so. And according to most estimates, that would create about 2 million construction jobs spread out over that five-year period. We don't think it actually creates extra jobs, but it probably shifts jobs, reducing jobs in one area and creating more construction jobs. Now, the question is, who will get those construction jobs? The House stimulus bill has a provision that says that anyone who receives funds under the bill as a contractor has to have mechanisms in place to make sure that the workers that are hired are U.S. citizens or lawful immigrants. The Senate bill deliberately has stripped that out so that there's no requirement whatsoever that the construction workers that would be hired under the bill would in fact be Americans or unemployed Americans. And typically in the construction industry today in the United States, about one out of seven workers is in fact an illegal immigrant. So if there's no provision to prevent illegal immigrants from being hired as under this stimulus bill, we could fully expect a similar ratio of the construction workers employed through the program to be illegal immigrants, and that would be about 300 illegal immigrants. And again, the most fascinating thing is that this is not an omission. It's a deliberate act on the part of the Senate. They deliberately want to use this bill to bail out illegal immigrants and to provide jobs for illegal immigrants rather than American citizens. The House bill has a small provision that would prevent this. It would require that any contractor who receives money from the federal government for under the stimulus bill has to use a federal system called E-Verify, which is an automatic check that when someone applies for a job and provides you with documents, it checks whether that person really exists, whether the document is real and authentic. It does that online automatically. It takes about 1 second to complete. It has a phenomenal accuracy rate, and it can weed out virtually all illegal immigrants. And it has a very, very low virtually no error rate whatsoever. And it's incredibly cheap. It costs businesses about $4 per employee to operate this system. If you're a very small employer, you can use a designated agent who will charge you $4 or $5 to do the check. It's a very simple way of ensuring that government money is not used to employ illegal immigrants. And in fact, the Democrats in Congress didn't want to do it. The Republicans stuck in language to require this use in the House, but the Senate is fighting against it at the behest of La Raza and organizations like that. The most interesting thing is that this system called E-Verify already exists. About 1 out of 10 employees in the United States is checked through it when they're hired each year, and it's very, very accurate in terms of preventing the hiring of illegal immigrants. It's very cheap, very easy to use. And in fact, if you required this system, E-Verify, to be used throughout the entire economy, the result would be that probably half of the illegal immigrants employed in the U.S., about 4 million of them, would in fact be weeded out and would lose their job. And it's a very, very simple way of substantially reducing illegal immigration. But the left in Congress hates this system and actually doesn't want to not only not use it, it wants to do away with it precisely because it will prevent illegal immigration. And unfortunately, some corrupt members of the business community also hate the system for exactly the same reason, that it would prevent them from hiring cheap illegal workers, and they really, really don't want to do that. They want to continue to hire illegals and bring them into the country. You know, 20 years ago, the last time the United States gave amnesty, in exchange for the amnesty, which was to be the last amnesty we would ever do, we made a promise to the U.S. citizens. We said, from here on in, it will be unlawful to employ illegal immigrants in the U.S. economy. And that law has been sitting on the books for 20 years and has never been enforced. The way to enforce that is to require employers to use this automatic checking system, which is almost instantaneous, has virtually no errors in it. There's never been a single U.S. citizen who has lost a job because of errors in this system. It basically identifies illegal immigrants and says, this person cannot be hired. And we have not enforced that law for 20 years because the American taxpayer, American citizen, is being flim-flammed by a left that wants more illegals in the U.S. because they get on welfare, because they want to make them voters and vote to shift the country to the left, and flim-flammed because a small number of corrupt businessmen want cheap labor, and they're willing to undermine our society in order to have a steady flow of that cheap illegal labor coming into the United States. So this is a very pivotal vote. The Senate will be voting on an amendment from Senator Jeff Sessions to require that all the money under the stimulus bill has to be used by contractors that use the E-Verify system, and it'll be an up-and-down vote. Really, it's a vote about, do you want this money? Do you want to subsidize illegal immigration, or do you want to protect American workers? Do you want to protect American society? That's the upshot of this issue. Back to you, Michael.
Thanks, Robert. We can only hope that they start doing what is right for our country. We cannot survive if they keep bringing in illegal aliens for cheap labor. They'll wind up voting the average American out of their own country. I'll be right back.
Savage.
This is an anti-Viagra song called Come Softly to Me, My Darling.
Come softly, darling. Come
in fact, this could be the theme song of the National Organization for Women. We didn't know it. Had no idea it was propaganda, Come Softly to Me. It was a brainwash. I didn't know. All right, thank you very much. Give him a few whatever. And I'll be right now. Where am I? I got some callers to take, too. Wow, the show's flying. It's amazing what a Friday can do to you. Oh, I said capenize. They capenize the whole generation. I looked up the word capon, for those of you who don't know what a capon is. A castrated male chicken. And that comes from the English for a castrated male chicken. That is right above Kappa Regime in the dictionary, which is a lieutenant in a criminal mob. I swear to God. Capon is right above Capo Regime, Capo Regime, and above Cap Pistol. But it's also near capitalism, actually, if you want to get into it. I don't know, there's a relationship. Of course, today, a castrated male chicken would more readily reference Hollywood than anything else. San Diego, Jay, you're on the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
Michael, I grew up in Queens. I went to Queens College like yourself, and I'm about your age. We've spoken.
Wait, were you on the rifle team?
No, I was not.
Isn't that interesting? How did I wind up on? In fact, if you look in the Jamaica High School yearbook, you see the rifle team, and there I am. I was no great rifle guy, but I remember shooting that Mossberg to this day. In between the boring geometry, I'd go down there and fire the gun. I loved the smell of the gunpowder. It woke me up. And by the way, Jay, nobody ran through the halls and shot anybody, incidentally.
That's right. That's right. Michael, you hit a nerve when you said something just before. You said if you were 12 years old and you knew what you knew now. I've often thought that. I'm just wondering, what would you do if you were 12 years old and you knew what you knew now?
Oh, the girls. It just was all about the girls. It was an offhanded comment about the girls.
Okay, I'm with
you. You didn't expect a serious answer from me. What could I have done at 12 except what I was doing? What, you say, if I know what I knew now, what could I? How could you have had some knowledge like I know now about the heart and the soul and this and that. I mean, instead of having a beating heart and fainting every time a girl came near me where my knees shook because I was so excited, I would have had a little more control over myself, Jay. That's all.
Yeah, well, I'm 55 and I still have no control over myself. So
hey, but thank God for Levitra, huh?
Well, it's out there, isn't it, right?
What, your wife's listening?
I hope so.
Oh. But, you know, the truth is, if our father's generation had Viagra and Levitra, they would have lived an extra 20 years.
Well, they would have had...
In other words, they would have had a reason to stay alive.
Exactly.
All right. Thanks. That went over like, yeah. Went over like everything else. 1-800-449-82. You think about it. They say that today's 60 is the last generation's 40. You know, you've heard that. That means what? Today's 80-year-old is like... that generation 60-year-old? So where does this end? I mean, how does this end up? How does this all conclude? You figure the average guy then stopped having fun with his body in that area, like when he was like, what, 30? They look so old, like 35. They had like haberdashers and hats and ties they had to wear. And then like from the pickles, I think, and the corned beef, what, I don't know, the bad food and the Lucky Strike. Probably by 40, they were no longer sexually active, would be my guess. So naturally, they died at 52. What was there to live for? What, another corned beef sandwich they were going to live for? What was there? There was nothing to live for. But I'm saying in those days, it was different because there was nothing to look forward to. Today, you got to hand it to modern science. It's Rock and Roll Friday. Play some music. All right, it's Rock and Roll Friday on the Savage Nation. We can't believe what we're watching. I mean, how many aquariums can you go to in your life is the question. How many towns need an aquarium? Well, to the Democrat, there's an infinite number of people who want to go to aquariums. I guess it'll create jobs for fish feeders and fish cleaners, but the cost of the jobs will be about $300,000 to $600,000 per job. So it's not that they're creating jobs. They're sending slush money back into the districts of the people who supported the fraud, the shill, the phony, the emperor. This is the Savage Nation. Be here or be nowhere.
Savage.
There is no comprehending the insanity of the left. During a House Judiciary Committee hearing, Congressman Steve King from Iowa asked Robert F. Kennedy Jr., the Lib, to confirm a quote he made to the Des Moines Register in 02, to which then turned into a somewhat heated debate. The congressman joins us today to talk about what happened with the nutcase RFK Jr.
Well, thanks, Michael. Well, in the Judiciary Committee and a subcommittee, we had a hearing. And it was about the midnight decisions made by President Bush in the month or so leading up to the inauguration of President Obama. The other side, the left, and believe me, the Judiciary Committee of the House of Representatives, the hardcore left, brought in front of us one of the most vigorous environmentalist extremists in the country, and that's Robert Kennedy Jr. He's an attorney, has an attorney's firm. He's built a reputation for being an extreme environmentalist, and he has made threats and has followed through on them in many cases, filing lawsuits against especially the meat industry and other environmental issues. When he came before the committee and he had his testimony, I listened to it, and he was waving his arms around, and he was pretty emphatic about it all and not the demeanor we normally see in a witness.
Well, what did you ask the nut that started this outburst?
I just asked him this question. Mr. Kennedy, you have reportedly made the statement in Iowa that large-scale hog producers are a greater threat to the United States and U.S. democracy than Osama bin Laden and his terrorist network. Can you confirm that that's an accurate quote? And his answer was, I don't know that it's accurate, but I believe it and I support it. So that's a confirmation that that's an accurate quote in my view. And then he went off on a long tirade about hog confinements, and it was unhinged in my view. And I live in the middle of the number one pork production area in the country, so I have some exposure there, and I think I do what I'm talking about in the industry. But in any case, I had the answer. He said yes, he'd confirm the quote. I sought to interrupt him so I could follow up with some questions, and finally the chair ruled on his side where and let him ramble on, which might have been good for America in the end to hear him come unhinged in that fashion. And then as I cut him off, then he said, well, you ask an inflammatory question. And I said, Mr. Kennedy, that's your quote. It's your quote that's inflammatory. So we went around on that quite a bit, and some of the other statements he made would be among them. The hog industry, and he was referenced to it, this is an exact quote, this industry meticulously subverted and corrupted virtually every relevant public official in the state, and he's referencing North Carolina. Later on, it did broader application to those officials that have to do with any pork-producing state, which would include Iowa. And I asked, and of course we had our little debate about that, and then I asked him, do you believe that manure is a toxic waste? And his answer was, when applied at the rates that you apply it, the answer is yes, manure is a toxic waste. So we get to the point where manure is a toxic waste. He argued that a single hog confinement does more pollution than a million people, and that may or may not be true, but they were very much inflammatory. And then I think of a man like Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who was clearly born with a silver spoon in his mouth, that has not been reined in or restrained in his demeanor, his manner, or his litigation in an entire working lifetime, sitting there as an expert witness on the environment and on what the President of the United States ought to have the authority to do, and considering also that he was under consideration to become the new EPA administrator, that tells you something about the hardcore left and how old he is. He's filed a whole number of lawsuits, and those lawsuits, some of them have been thrown out of court for being specious. So that's the Bobby Kennedy exchange that's taken place, and we had a couple other sharp disagreements at that point, but the allegation that virtually every relevant public official in the state of North Carolina or other pork-producing states has been subverted and corrupted is just way off the mark, and I had to remind him that we do have a safe environment, that hogs are safer to the environment on a per-head basis or on a gross numbers basis than they have been. They're safer every day. We had more hogs in 1952than we have today, and those that we have today are better for the environment by far. And so anyway, we have a sharp disagreement there, and it melted down. It was the most intense exchange that I've had in any time I've been in the committee.
Congress has been having some pretty heated debates on the S-CHIP legislation as well.
We've been going on with that for about a year and a half, the State Children's Health Insurance Program. And I call it the socialized Clinton-style health care for illegals and their parents. That's the acronym S-CHIP from my perspective. Now, that was passed in 1997 and provided health insurance premium support for families that didn't quite qualify for Medicaid, but were not quite well enough off to buy health insurance for their children. So that was 200% of poverty on down. Well, I should say up to 200% of poverty. Well, Nancy Pelosi pushed through the House a little over a year ago a 400% of poverty S-CHIP bill, and then the president vetoed it after it came back from the Senate at 300%. We upheld the president's veto, and it was a nasty debate, and I found myself the only member of the Iowa congressional delegation that voted no. So in any case, we successfully killed the S-CHIP until we come under the new administration of President Obama. Where now Pelosi brought it back again, and it went to the Senate, and it came back under a conference report, and we essentially got run over. I mean, we stood and fought, and we debated, but we lost the vote on S-CHIP. So now S-CHIP pays health insurance premiums up to 300% of poverty, and in that legislation, it eliminated their requirement that Medicaid applicants prove their citizenship, that they certify their citizenship. And so now, any illegal in America can walk into the office and simply attest to having a Social Security number. Run out the string of numbers. It can be anybody's numbers. It could be your number, Michael, or mine, or my mother's or my brother's. And there is no checking that will be going on. So it opens the door, and opening this door is the Congressional Budget Office put a figure on that, and I believe the number was $8.9 billion was the cost to the federal taxpayer for opening up the requirements or for certification of citizenship under SCHIP. And then SCHIP also eliminated the five-year bar. So up until this legislation passed, when you have a legal immigrant, now the previous piece that I talked about was for illegal immigrants, when you have a legal immigrant, then they are no longer required to be self-sufficient for 5 years. The standard has been, we'll bring people into America legally, but they have to be able to sustain themselves. If they can't do that, then their sponsor will have to sign an affidavit that verifies that. That's taken out, too. That's another chunk of money, and when you add the two pieces together, it's at least $12.5 billion, the cost to the taxpayers, because they've lowered the standards while they're writing SCHIP, while they're raising the standard from 200% of poverty to 300%, when they eliminate the waivers the limit on the waivers that has been a requirement for the states, then states like New York and New Jersey, which are 400% now, can go well over that. What it amounts to is that there'll be health insurance premiums paid by middle-income and lower-income taxpayers that go to fund the children of millionaires. And illegal immigrants will be able to walk in and sign up for Medicaid and simply make up a Social Security number, qualify for Medicaid. And while that's going on, legal immigrants that had a five-year responsibility to sustain themselves before they became a ward of the state will become wards of the state on the first day that they legally set foot inside the United States. That's why America is outraged. That's the kind of mindset that comes from the Pelosi agenda, the San Francisco liberal agenda. And it's the kind of mindset that comes out of Barney Frank, who is one of the leading practitioners of this. And it's something that President Obama has not willingly accepted. The facts and the truth of this, the people in America know. But right now, I think there's a lot of buyer's remorse across America as they begin to understand that we have an open borders administration here, that there exists a troika that's running this country today, and that troika would be Obama, Nancy Pelosi, Harry Reid. If those three people walk into the Oval Office or a phone booth, for that matter, and sit down and make a decision about the future of America, there's no way to put a check on them except for the threat of a filibuster effort we still have that remains in the United States Senate, and maybe the outrage of the American people if it can penetrate that far before we move on to the next piece of liberal agenda. I'm concerned about our country. I'm concerned about mistakes being made that can't be rectified, and that if we move forward now with this stimulus plan on top of SCHIP, and we're watching these liberals come into the administrations, and the same liberals like Bobby Kennedy Jr., I don't know how we ever get ourselves back to the kind of a self-reliant, fiscally responsible, socially conservative country that it's going to take if we are going to move on to the next level of an exceptional American destiny.
Thank you, Congressman King. This is clearly a dangerous road we're traveling down. Please keep trying to steer the rest of Congress straight. This is the Savage Nation. I'll be back. Savage. Hollywood is having their biggest award night, the trade show, the Oscars, about 2 weeks from now. Our Eye on Hollywood, James Hurston, now joins us for a report on Pelosi paybacks and tantrum-throwing stars.
Thanks, Michael. It turns out that Pelosi and company have found a way to pay back Barbara Streisand, Michael Moore, and their friends in Hollywood. Yeah, the liberals in Hollywood, you know, the same ones who gave buku bucks to help put Barack Obama into the White House and put Democrats in Congress, they're getting a bailout. The pork on parade bill, the so-called stimulus, lets Hollywood filmmakers write off half the production and filming costs of big-budget movies and television shows. It's going to amount to an estimated $246 million in tax breaks. Oh, by the way, Michael, there's nothing in the bill that caps or limits Hollywood's salaries. I mean, that would really tick off the artistes out here. Not that there haven't been lots of temper tantrums in Tinseltown. You remember Michael Richards, the guy who played Kramer on Seinfeld, ended his career by going nuts on stage. And remember Alec Baldwin's cell phone message to his daughter, where he lovingly called her a thoughtless little pig? Well, now, actor Christian Bale, who just starred as the title character in the second biggest earning movie ever made, The Dark Knight, recently had an on-set meltdown. Bale can be heard on a recording delivering a long, profanity-laced tirade to a cinematographer named Shane Hurlbut. Now, this happened on the set of another Hollywood sequel. That's just all we need is another Hollywood sequel, Terminator Salvation. And the recording found its way to TMZ and then appeared all over the net. The temper tantrum took place in July last year, just days before Bale's mother and sister had accused him of assault. This assault allegedly took place before the London premiere of The Dark Knight. Charges were never filed. But this guy Bale must be a method actor. Because remember, Michael, he was the star of American Psycho. In his next movie, Bale's going to portray an FBI agent who stalks John Dillinger. Sounds good, except John Dillinger is going to be played by Johnny Depp. The film is titled Public Enemies, and it's directed by Michael Mann. This is a guy who's been nominated for an Academy Award four times. Never won yet. So Christian Bale could be a candidate for an Academy Award next year. But then he asks the question, how does his diva tantrum affect his chances at getting an Oscar? So we take a look at some Hollywood history. There were two guys who lost the most nominations, the most times in the Oscars, Richard Burton and Peter O'Toole. Richard Burton lost seven times. Peter O'Toole lost eight times. They got the record. Marlon Brando was legendary for temper tantrums, just like Peter O'Toole and Richard Burton, well known for creating problems on the set. And guess what? Brando was the only cast member of A Streetcar Named Desire who didn't get an award in 1951, even though he was the critics' Oscar favorite. And then Brando lost two other Best Actor nominations over the next 2 years, but later won after behaving so much better. In 1954, he won for On the Waterfront, that great movie. More recently, we've got Russell Crowe. Back in 2000, he was a top A-list star. Remember the movie Gladiator, a great film, and it won all the awards, and Crowe won for Best Actor. In the next year, 2001, Crowe was cruising for another Oscar with the film A Beautiful Mind. He'd already won a Golden Globe, a Critics' Choice, a Screen Actors Guild Award, and the British Oscars, BAFTA. But while he was over in the UK, a report came out that Crowe had roughed up, had beat up, a British television producer. And guess what? The Best Actor Oscar that year was picked up by, not Crowe, but by Denzel Washington for Training Day. And 2 years later, even though Master and Commander received 10 nominations, including Best Picture, Crowe received no nominations. In 2005, Crowe had another Oscar potential pick. You remember that one? Cinderella Man. Good movie. It was on its way to Oscarland. And that year, the actor had his famous tantrum. He pulled a telephone out of the wall and threw it at a hotel clerk. It was caught on video, placed on the web. Cinderella Man ended up a flop, and Crowe was passed over by the Motion Picture Academy. Ironically, Russell Crowe co-starred with Christian Bale in 2007 in a film called 310 to Yuma. I think there were a few tantrums on that set. Back to you, Michael.
Thank you, James. With the amount of money Hollywood pours into Washington, it doesn't surprise me that they're getting some returns. You know, I see the whole world through many different ways, in many different ways, excuse me. And I could tell you that today, I saw the world through a chicken leg. I know you're going to say, what's he going to say now? Well, I'll tell you what I'm going to say now. I can even describe the world as it is today through a chicken leg. Let me explain. I wanted to make chicken soup today. I haven't made it in 10 years. I once tried it 10 years ago. Then I made it about 3 months ago. But I realized there was something missing from the chicken soup. I tried to think back to what my mother made. And I said, by God, what's missing are the chicken's legs. I wanted the chicken legs in the soup. The reason I wanted the chicken legs in the soup is very, very interesting to me anyway. And that is because I was looking for natural sources of hyaluronic acid. You don't know what hyaluronic acid is, but I'll tell you what it is. Hyaluronic acid has been found to reduce inflammation, lessen arthritis. And strangely enough, hyaluronic acid, or HA, is a component of our vitreous fluid in our eye. And strangely this year, I had an eye problem that was found in the emergency room to be resultant from some change in my vitreous humor. I've had minor arthritis come on in the last 3 months, which I've never had before. I've never suffered any of this before. And suddenly I was reading about hyaluronic acid, and I said, wait a minute. Two symptoms, both of which might be related to HA. Why don't I try to get some naturally? So I do my research, having a PhD in human nutrition, having written so many books in the field of nutrition as a pioneer in the field since the 1970s. I said, my God, look at this. Chicken skin, chicken legs contain high amounts of this component, hyaluronic acid. So I said to my housekeeper, could you please go get me a chicken with the legs? Tell the butcher you want the legs. I get a call back. No legs in the chicken. Can't find it in any market. What? I called a butcher. I said, where are the chicken legs? He said, we don't get the legs. I said, well, who gets the legs? He said, they're sold before we get the chicken, even if you buy a whole chicken. They're sold to people who make chicken soup. I said, of course. They're sold for chicken soup. That's what I'm trying to make. But then I thought, and I said, the greed in America is so great. The corruption is so great that you can't even buy a chicken with chicken legs and gizzards anymore because the crooks at the top of the food chain want to suck out the chicken legs and the gizzards and sell them to someone else. It's like the old adage about the man who raised pigs and sold pigs. We sell everything but the squeal. But you can't even get chicken legs unless you're Chinese and you go to Chinatown. You see, because the Chinese are smarter than you are. Americans are kind of naive when it comes to food. They don't even know food. They don't understand food. They think food is multiple courses in a rotten restaurant that charges $99 for rotten food paired with bad wine. But the Chinese are much smarter. When they buy a chicken, it better be clucking. And when that chicken is killed, they better get all the parts that came with that clucking chicken, including the feet, just as my Aunt Bee did. Because the idea of buying a chicken without feet is the same thing as buying a president without legs. This is the Savage Nation.
Savage.